Listening Part 1. You will hear three different extracts. For questions 1 to 6, choose the answer A, B or C, which fits best according to what you hear. There are two questions for each extract. Extract 1. You hear part of an interview with a psychologist called Sandy talking about clothing.
It's true that clothing is a basic need, like food or water, but I think we can all agree it's become so much more than that. In today's world, the clothing we wear is a mirror that reflects who we think we are and who we want to be.
But is that really new?
Well, yes and no. Of course, clothing has always been meaningful. Traditionally, the clothes people wore symbolised cultural affiliations and values, age and ethnicity. But these days, our wardrobe choices encompass all that, plus a sense of fashion and personal style. Not to stray too much into jargon, but this is why we behaviour theorists call clothing an artefact of extended self.
And that's where brands come in, which I know is a particular focus of yours.
Exactly. Thanks to globalisation and the internet, most of us, in our own way, are becoming brand-conscious consumers. We splurge on certain clothing brands because of their association with celebrities, subcultures, or leisure activities. Or more often than not, as much as we are loath to admit it, to project a sense of having arrived, mixed with a certain vibe of aspiration.
Extract 2. You hear two friends, a newspaper editor and a dentist, discussing their jobs.
Are you saying your job defines you?
I'm not sure I'd go that far, but I would say that jobs in general tend to reinforce certain traits. For example, as a news editor, I'm being trained every day to prioritise what's happening right now, at this moment. And it's not hard to see how that mindset spills over into the rest of my life. If only I were a bit better at compartmentalising things.
Yeah, same here. Being a dentist, I'm so much less trusting than I used to be. Day after day, people who are decent and upstanding in their everyday lives, well, they cancel their appointments, saying something just came up. Sure it did. And when they do show up, they sit down and start lying to me straight away about how much they've flossed. And the next time I see them, what do you know? They've continued to neglect their teeth, despite their promises. Being in this particular psychological environment for years, well, it's definitely affected me, instilled particular habits of mind.
Extract 3. You hear part of a lecture by an academic who is talking about oral history.
Let me just read you a quotation from an oral history interview. It's from a man who, as a child, worked in the circus during the 19th century. Most children, their parents are proud when their kids grow. Not mine. One day my dad's measuring me for a new costume and discovers I've sprouted up. Oh my, does he curse. You see, he's hoping I stay small, so it's easy to throw and catch me. Memorable, isn't it? You see, it's one thing to read facts and figures about the lives of working-class children a century ago. It's quite another to hear about it from someone first-hand. In their own voice, in their own words. You see, at the end of the day, history consists of stories, and what stories get told and who gets to tell them is important. Traditional history courses usually only touch on major events, on the whos, whens, and whats. Oral history brings depth to our understanding of the past, giving apparently peripheral characters a starring role. Through the exploration of their identities, we're drawn closer to their reality, and this tends to complicate the story a bit. It helps avoid the sort of sweeping generalizations that reinforce prejudice, stereotype people, and overlook key variables in the historical context.